Thank you very much. Back here again. Ladies and gentlemen, there are about two real significant reasons why this Cortland area has so much music and so many fine musicians. And one of the important reasons is because we've always had in the greater Cortland area a very fine instrumental music program. And that accounts for the wealth of these fine musicians that produce so much great music. When I was a student at Crane School of Music taking a course in instrumental music, I remember the professor saying to us, there's a small city in the southern tier where there's an outstanding band. The band always earns 6A ratings at the competition. Now, 6 means that they played the highest level of difficulty of music, and of course they got A ratings all the time. So I just remember this sort of thing. After I graduated and became a music teacher, we used to have summer clinics where all the bandmasters would go and bring their instruments and play all the new band literature. And this is where I met a fellow by the name of Bert Stanley. He and I sat together and we became good friends and so forth. And little did I know then that I would end up in Cortland where Bert Stanley taught. And one of the first things I did when I got here was to hear the Cortland band. And I could not believe they played better than my college band. And I said to myself, how can this guy get these people to play so well and such in mature kind of music? And then I heard the Homer band. Charlie Roberts was up there. And they had a great instrumental music program. Then I met the Truxton band. And I couldn't believe this whole area had so much great music. And it's because of that very, very fine music program which they had here. Let me throw the names out of the people who came out of these programs and how good they were and what they ended up doing. Everybody here, Jerry Zampino. Jerry Zampino was one of the finest clarinetists that ever came out of Cortland. Jerry played with the Syracuse Symphony Orchestra for 20 plus years. He doesn't play now, his hands are a little arthritic. But I remember his playing with the Syracuse Symphony when he had the solos. His clarinet would just soar over that whole orchestra. Jerry Zampino is from Cortland. Of course, Arnie Gabriel. I'll mention him again. We had a testimonial. I know what I'm on. The old timers band, when I was their director, we asked him to be our guest conductor. And we had the program right there in that beautiful Homer Green. And there must have been over 1,500 people. That's what the Cortland Standard. That whole open area had people. And what a concert we had. Everybody just loved him, and he's such a great musician. But I want to tell you, when he finally retired from the service, those of us here in town had a testimonial dinner for him at the Holiday Inn. And I can remember first of all, Bert Stanley came all the way from Potsdam. He left Cortland, went to Potsdam. He came all the way from there for the dinner. And my God, we were all sold out. And I gave him my ticket. My God, the guy traveled 200 miles to get there. And I knew what he was. So I gave him my ticket. I was a master of ceremony. I said, the waitress is not going to give me a hard time. They don't have a ticket. So anyway, Arnie Gabriel stood up there when he had the time to talk. And he said, Bert Stanley right here is the reason why I'm up here. He said, let me tell you, I graduated from high school and I didn't have any money to go to college because I didn't know what to do with my life. And I ended up picking beans with all the poor people here in Cortland. And one day in August, Bert Stanley came out there. He looked at me and said, what are you doing picking beans, a guy with your musical talent? And he said, I don't have any money to go to college and all that. And Bert Stanley says, put that basket down and you come with me. I'm going to put you in college and I'm going to make sure that you are a music person. And the guy ended up the director of the greatest of the military bands with the Air Force. Danny D'Imperio, I mentioned him. Danny is a truly outstanding drummer. When Buddy Rich, you know the great music man Buddy Rich, a drummer, when he died, the people called up Danny D'Imperio to play. And Danny learned his stuff in no time at all, a couple of days, and he played all of Buddy Rich's drum solos with real authority. Danny's father told me when Danny was playing with the Glenn Miller band, they were playing in Scranton. He went down there to hear his son play, and the director of the band got up there on the microphone. He says, "We're going to play a piece of music next that we haven't played in 5 years because we've never had a drummer who could play as fast as this number should go and to hold it." And with that, Danny was playing up a storm. So Danny, another one of our great people. Sam Cipollone's out here today, and Sam's a great clarinetist, and he went on to be a great band leader down in the Southern Tier. He and I have always had a going argument of who's a better clarinetist, he or myself. And he proves it because if we got to play, he's there before I am, and he sits in the first chair and won't get any play. Corky Fabrizio, who took over the school band after Bert Stanley left. Again, many of these musicians I'm going to talk about were also products of Corky Fabrizio. Not only a great trumpet player and a good band director, the guy arranges music. He's made his money by arranging music for bands and also for these drum and bugle corps. He's always in demand for that sort of thing. Gene Adelson, who followed Corky Fabrizio, was also outstanding. Now, how about Charlie Bertini? A real pro. He's got a name everywhere you go. And he plays so wonderful well. And nice thing, he comes back here and shares his music with us. Every year, they're going to two concerts. And he's an outstanding trumpet player. Jeff Dovey, who fronts that group there, was also a product of our particular school. Great trumpet player, plays first chair, played it for years with the old timers band. And Tony Perfetti and the brother David Perfetti. Tony was a professional trumpet player in New York City, playing, again, all those big shows and so forth. And Dave is a French horn player, played with the biggest in symphony. Jerry Natoli, Phil Natoli's son, one of the best trombonists that I've ever heard in my life. And his cousin, Phil Natoli, played trumpet. He was a music teacher up in the Syracuse area. So, many good people. Now, also, let me talk about Homer. When Charlie Roberts was up there, a fellow by the name of Dale Underwood. Now, the name should be familiar to you. He is by far one of the best concert saxophone players. He's with the Navy Band, and he's come back here, too, to share some of his wealth. Also from the Homer School, Nick Pauldine, who, again, and he directs the Ageless Jazz Band that comes here every summer. Real great, great musician. And his sister, Tony, who's a good singer. From McGraw, I remember a gal by the name of June Belknap, who became June Clancy. She sang ballads and stuff with the old Spiegel Wilcox band. And from Cincinnati's Bob Wright, who plays piano, plays the tuba, taught strings at the college. And why not? How about Pat Ahern, who was one of our products, who ended up on Broadway. He had the leads in several Broadway shows, and many, many times it was on the road with all kinds of shows. Now, one little comment. I hope you notice with those names that I read that most of them are Italian names. Right? Now, before you color me prejudiced and biased, let me tell you a story. At Syracuse University, I was taking a graduate course in the psychology of music, and we had a very renowned professor by the name of Dr. Jacob Qualwasser. And one day he said in class, "Which ethnic group do you think are the most musically gifted?" He says, "Percucci, what's your answer?" And I was always a real diplomat. And I knew he was of Jewish extraction, so I said, "The Jewish people." I said, "Look at Leonard Bernstein, Isaac Stern." I went on and mentioned them there. And he said, "I'm surprised at your answer." He said, "No question about it." And he wanted the Italians far exceed everybody other ethnic group. And he went on to support his statement. But what I liked at the very end of his little talk, he smiled at me and said, "Sam," he says, "we Jews have to work for it, but you Italians have got it." The second thing I want to talk to is about what we know of today as the Old Timers Band. You know, around the turn of the 20th century, we had a real influx of Italian immigrants coming here. Many of them were recruited right in Italy or down on Ellis Island. They worked at Wickwires, and they helped build all these railroads through here. We had three different companies of railroads across here in Cortland. So anyway, a lot of them settled on the east end, and some of them settled on the south end. Now, these people wanted to keep a lot of their Italian culture. They lived together where they could still talk Italian and still keep the cultural things of Italy, which is part of them and that they love. At the same time, being assimilated and, of course, learning the English language. But first thing they do, and of course, what all Italian communities do, they built it. They had a church. They had to have a church. And they used the patron saint, Saint Anthony. Now, their first church was an old spaghetti factory, which they converted into a church. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that they have to have the feast of that particular, you know, patron saint. And so it came time for St. Anthony's Day. Now, they had to have it where you would go in the Italian neighborhood to gather the people together, to bring them to church, and then in the afternoon they'd have all that great Italian food, and then at night you had to have a band concert and fireworks. Incidentally, Cortland had in East End one of the best pyrotechnic wizards anywhere, and Patsy Bettino. And I've read accounts in the newspaper, our Cortland Standard, it was the biggest thing in Cortland, the St. Anthony celebration, bigger than the June Dairy Parade, if you can believe that. Thousands of people came from everywhere in the early days of that. Now, they had to have a band. Now, there wasn't city band, and I think Mary Ann King would speak to it, and they had a Mittagon conducted, not a non-Italian conducted, by the name of George something. Anyway, he directed the band, and the Italians weren't satisfying him because he's playing non-Italian music. So then they arranged for Arturo D'Arcy from Syracuse to come down here and direct the band. Now, all these people I talked about and the good program I talked about, that didn't even get started until maybe the 50s or so. Now, how could Cortland have a band without a great school program to feed them? Well, this is interesting. Most of the Italian immigrants who came here learned to play a musical instrument in Italy. Now, I'll give you an example. My own father. My father was a blacksmith. He pounded hot steel 10 hours a day. But he played the most beautiful bass horn you ever heard in your life. He played like he was a graduate of a music conservatory. He did boom, 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 and so forth. And so therefore, when they said, we got to have an Italian band, everybody says, hey, I play the trombone. Hey, I play the flute. I'm a drummer. And they pulled them all together, and this D'Arcy conducted them. And of course, everybody was happy because they were playing the old Italian operas and the old Italian marches and so forth. Well, D'Arcy got a job in Providence to direct a band there. And this is when a fellow by the name of Frank Crisera came forth. He was in the band, and he organized a good band. And let me tell you, the band was so great under his directorship. He planned his programs beautifully, and again, you read the old Cortland Standards, you'll find wonderful reviews of what the band sounded like. And so he conducted the band, and again, now, the church now was really well on its way in that spaghetti factory. And so his band was no longer called by the old name of D'Arcy conducted. It was called the Mascagni Band. That was a famous Italian composer. They called it the St. Anthony Band because the priest over there was helping out. And so they played for many, many years in those Italian celebrations. Now, things happened, of course. World War II came along, and all the men were gone, and the band kind of just broke up. And then all of a sudden, after the war, they formed the Cortland Civic Band, which again, Frank Crisera conducted. They had a lot of good backing, and the same people played in then. And that went on until Mr. Crisera started getting kind of old and not able to conduct the group. Now, here is where the old-timer's name comes from. The committee, the St. Anthony Committee at the church, said, we got to have a band. Can you get those old people together and form a band? People like Phil Natoli and John DeShenza said, let's get all the old-timers together and see if we can form the band again. And I remember this is when they asked me to play in the band. And so we had a group, and we call it the Old Timers Band. Now, Mr. Crucero was conducting, but he was really deep into senility then. I remember just standing up there and beating time, and I'd say, we're at number 20, and this is in 3, not 4. And so anyway, we decided he could not conduct anymore. And that's when I picked up the baton and became the director of the band. And I did this for 21 years, and about 7 years ago, I gave the baton to Donna Iacobo, who was doing an outstanding job. She's expanding the numbers in the band, and they're playing very well. So the Old Timers Band really lives on, and of course, they still play the great old St. Anthony celebration. I have to share a good funny story with you about Italian feasts. My hometown band is an Italian band, and we were going to play for an Italian feast in Saratoga Springs. So we did what bands do. We went out in the neighborhood and collected all the Italian people, and they followed the band right up to the church. And when we get to the church, the band opens up the ranks, and the people just walk into the church. Well, we were playing when people were walking to church, and I looked, and here's an Irish-looking Monsignor leaning up against the door. Well, after everybody went in there, they closed the door, and he came and says, "Who's the band leader?" So they pointed to me, and he said, "Listen, this is my first Italian celebration, but my brother priests tell me I shouldn't be surprised at the holiest part of the Mass, the elevation." He said, "I'm expecting to hear a noisy piece of music played by the band outside and bombs going up." So I said, "Well, Father, you know, these people try to keep the old tradition of Italy, and that noisy piece we play is the Italian national anthem. It's called the Royal Italian March." He said, "I don't give a darn what it is." He said, "I don't want it here." Now, and the fireworks man was standing right next to me. He said, "I don't want any bombs either." So the guys in the band heard that, and I said, "Look, if you want to get a cup of coffee or a drink, come back in an hour because we have a parade to play." Luckily, most of the band sat on the lawn. So everything's fine until this little short Italian comes out. And a big badge that said, "Il Presidente." And he said to me, "Hey, professor, marcia la marcia viola, la marcia viola. Professor, play the Royal Italian March." And so I said, "No." I said, "The Monsignor here said he doesn't want the march. He doesn't want any bombs and all that." He looked at me dumbfoundedly. And I said, "Maybe this guy doesn't speak English." So I said, "Hey, ubrello maldito." And I said, "In Italian." And he looked at me and said, "Hey, who's the Bayou? The priest or me?" I said, "You's a Bayou." So right on, the band guys were up and had the music, bang, and as you expect, who came out but the Monsignor? He said, his face was as red as his robe. He said, "I told you." And I said, "Hey, talk to him. He's a Bayou." Let me follow through in my last area, and I want to talk about jazz in Cortland County and all its tributaries. Okay? When I came to Cortland in 1951, I taught my first day on Monday, and I was changing my clothes to go down and eat supper, and I looked out the window. I was living in a house right across from the campus, and I looked and I saw this car parked there, and a white-haired man, and it was very nice jaunty walk, came up and rang our front doorbell. So my landlady came and he said, "Mrs. Borrell," he said, "I understand you got a hot sax player living here." And she says, "I don't know, there's a new person here." And I heard upstairs and I came down and I said, "Yes, I play sax." He said, "Do you play tenor?" I said, "Yeah, I'm tenor." Then he said, "Do you know how to ride?" And I had to think about that. I never used that term. He meant, "Can you improvise? Can you play hot courses and all that?" I said, "Sure, I sure can." He said, "What are you doing Friday night?" And I said, "I'm playing with your band." He said, "You know where the gym is at the college?" I said, "No, but I got 4 days to find it." So anyway, the night came, and we were doing a nice bassy number, and I had a whole chorus ad lib. So I got up and played, and when I was playing, I looked over here, and I saw Spiegel standing there with his trombone dangling across his body and listening to everything I was playing. And when I finished, he said, I don't know what the hell you played, but it was just 32 bars. Well, people, when I got here, I was surprised at the number of jazz musicians. I went to my first union meeting, and there were at least 60 people playing there. They were all jazz musicians. And then, what a surprise. I was playing with Spiegel Wilcox, a 16-piece band, and there was another big band in town, John McNeil, the McNeil Brothers. And then there were all these small jazz combos. Let me tell you, in the 50s, everybody was dancing. We didn't have to have drugs. We didn't have to have booze. We'd play, and the dance floor was full of people. By the time the piano played the introduction, they were all out there and having a great time. So jazz was big in Cortland, and I had a great time doing it. Now, I also have to tell you that we had a lot of country western here. Remember? Every Saturday morning on WKRT, you could hear Tex Roll and Everidge and people like that. And we had a fiddler in town by the name of Bob Forbes. He made Monkey out of Charlie Daniels. I mean, he played so well. And so country western has also been big in Cortland. And of course, it all ended up in the Country Music Park here. And there they have the best, biggest celebrities in country western music that come to Cortland to perform. So everything's fine. We even have a bluegrass music here. You know, we got a group called the Delaney Brothers. They play in our parks. I mean, they play it with real authority, and they're on call. They play in Kentucky. They play in Tennessee, and so forth. Now, along with that, people, finally, we have all kinds of great music programs. I was a cultural director at the college for 20 years. I brought in 11 symphony orchestras. I brought in the Duke Ellington Band, the Count Basie Band. And now we have the Syracuse Symphony Orchestra that plays 4 concerts here in Cortland. And I'm so proud of the people in Cortland. They buy tickets and fill that auditorium. And what a wonderful audience they are. Two of the directors with the Syracuse Symphony told me they love to come to Cortland. In fact, they plan their concerts, their big concert in Syracuse, right after they play in Cortland, because we're such a good group that lifts them up so they play well beyond themselves. Let me end up by just telling you 2 little stories about some big people we had at the college. One of them was the Boston Pops. The Boston Pops. I remember meeting the group, and I had to meet Arthur Fiedler at the door and take him to his dressing room. So I met him, and we come in, and we're walking down the hall, and he looked at me and said, now what do you do at the college? And I said, I'm a music professor. I teach theory and literature. And he looked at me and says, you college people hate my music. And I said, gee, on the contrary, Mr. Fiedler. I said, I was instrumental in getting you here. Well, now he puts his arm around me, and we're walking down the hallway like a couple of Irish leprechauns. And we got into his dressing room, and he looked at me and says, here. He reached in his inner pocket, and he had a flask. He said, would you like a little nip? And I think during intermission, he must have finished that flask, because they ended up with a great big showpiece called Gaite Parisienne, and it ends up with a can-can number. And so they're finishing up. And he cut them off there, and there was a wallop at the end. So he cut them off, and the whole orchestra, boom. So I could still see him. He was going, mea culpa, mea culpa. So he finished that flask. Finally, we had Louis Armstrong just 50 years ago this April that played at the college, and we had so many people there that I was afraid the firemen were going to close this up. But it was a great concert. Intermission time, I went back to give Louis his check. And I said, Louis, can I do anything for you and all that? He said, yeah, man. He said, we're staying in Syracuse. He said, but I'm so hungry. We're all so hungry. We'll never get there. He says, can we eat in Cortland? I said, what kind of food do you want? He said, Italian. And I said, well, I said, the Green Arch is the best food. And I said, but they're closed on Sunday. But the proprietor is out there in the audience. I said, don't worry, I'll have it all arranged so you'll have Italian food after the concert. I went to Mike DeShenza sitting there, and I said, Mike, who do you recommend? He said, Sam, you know, we're closed on Sunday, but I got food in the refrigerator. He says, listen, I'll feed Louis and his orchestra for nothing, he says. It would be a privilege for me to say that Louis Armstrong ate at my restaurant. So I had great news when I went back to see Louis. I said, we're all arranged, half hour, and we're going to eat beautiful food and all that. So I took him to the Green Arch, and I was going to the movie that night, so I couldn't stay. Now, 3 or 4 days later, I stopped at the Green Arch. I said, Mike, how'd everything go with Louis and his band? He said, Sam, I had the privilege of feeding him. I also had the privilege of throwing him out my front door. I said, what happened, Louis? And he said, they started getting so drunk. They had 4 black people and 2 white people in the orchestra. He said, they were using the N-word, and they were using, you know, poor whites and all that sort of thing. He says, finally, I threw them out. So, Bruce, I hope we finished the Portland Is Music Country, okay?
Thank you, Sam. It is ironic that I'm the moderator of this forum because Jim is right. I can't carry a tune. My daughters cringe when I start to sing. But I really enjoy music, and I also teach history, so I have a tremendous respect for somebody that's able to combine musical talent with historical references, and that was fantastic. So thank you, Sam.